From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. When it comes to Southwest Florida history, you've probably heard about the contributions of men like Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, or Captain Frances Hendry, but what about the region's influential women? As March marks National Women's History Month, this morning's panel of local experts will highlight some of the well-known and lesser-known women who shaped our region. Plus, the political contest among candidates looking to replace Trey Radel in Congress has been heating up in recent weeks. Despite early talk of a clean campaign, attack ads have emerged from super PACs and from the campaigns of Senator Lisbeth Benequisto, former CEO Kurt Clausen, and former State Representative Paige Kriegel. Ahead of the April 22nd GOP primary, we'll explore this evolving campaign and analyze ads to separate fact from fiction. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. For the rest of the hour, we'll be revisiting the race for Florida's Congressional District 19 seat. The solidly Republican district, which includes portions of Lee and Collier counties, had been represented by Tea Party Republican Trey Radel. But in January, Radel bowed to mounting pressure for his resignation after it was revealed he had pled guilty to cocaine possession last fall and was sentenced to 1 year probation. Calls for Radel's resignation came from a variety of political leaders, including Governor Rick Scott. He'd also faced a looming congressional ethics investigation. And last month, we featured a segment on Gulf Coast Live exploring the top candidates vying for Radel's former seat in Congress in the GOP primary special election coming up April 22nd. Those candidates include State Senate Majority Leader Lisbeth Benequisto, retired CEO Kurt Clausen, former State Representative Paige Kriegel, and Pine Island businessman Michael Drakehorn. Listening back to our initial conversation on that congressional race, Lisbeth Benequisto seemed like the most likely candidate to win, but surveys released this month now show Clausen with a lead in the polls. And despite early calls for a clean campaign, animosity has been growing in attack ads from political action committees and from the candidates' campaigns. Joining me now for a second look at this congressional race and analysis of some of the claims made in these campaign ads is political columnist Betty Parker. You can read her weekly column covering state politics each week in the Fort Myers News Press. Betty, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
And in studio, we have another frequent guest to the show, Dr. Roger Green, political science professor here at Florida Gulf Coast University. Roger, thanks for being with us again.
Hi, John. Good to be back.
And I invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Again, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Betty, in one of your recent columns focusing on this race, you talk about something you call the Radel effect. What do you mean by that, and where can we see it reflected in the campaigns, perhaps not necessarily overtly?
There's been so much concern with the candidates who are running about the lingering distaste people have for politics, and their distrust of politicians has been really magnified, and people thought this would cause voters to look for a candidate very different from Radel, who, if you remember, kind of came in with no political background particularly and made a big sweep. He was very charming. He ran some terrific ads. His ad campaign was spectacular and went on to win the race. And a lot of people thought we had learned a lesson by taking in the latest bright shiny object. There's some question now about whether that holds true or not.
Right. Kurt Clausen in particular has been characterizing himself as the political outsider candidate. The person who's outside this perception of, a quote-unquote corrupt political establishment, do you think this campaign technique could end up backfiring on him? I mean, on the one hand, it worked really well for Tea Party candidates throughout the country in the 2010 elections. But on the other hand, as you mentioned, that's the same way Trey Radel characterized himself when he was campaigning. And, of course, candidates don't want to be linked to Radel in any way.
Well, so far it seems to be working for him really well. I kind of have to laugh at that outsider designation because he has surrounded himself with people who are insiders on a a national basis, and you can't blame him for that. If you have the money and you can hire the best people, then yes, you're going to hire the best people you can who think work best for your campaign and round up all the support you can get from prominent people. But how long you can do that and remain an insider is, I don't know, that's kind of funny to me.
In recent weeks, you know, Paige Kriegel has become more the subject of criticism and attack ads because of this voicemail message he left for Kirk Klaassen, warning him that a super PAC that was supporting Kriegel would be spending a lot of money attacking both Klaassen and Beniquisto. And a recent Klaassen ad suggesting, or it suggests that Kriegel may have broken the law by communicating with the super PAC. And I'm just going to quote from the ad here. Campaign communication between candidates and political PACs is illegal. The PAC is financed by Paige Kriegel's longtime friends. The negative ad wasn't public. Is it a coincidence Kriegel was first to know? Betty, what is your analysis on that?
That ad, I am in awe of that ad. I listen to it every time it comes on because the ability to say and imply something that's really not unusual or untoward. But, and they never say, if you listen carefully, they don't say anything that's technically untrue. But it leaves you with the impression that something happened that did not necessarily have to happen, and I don't think did happen. You know, it doesn't take any rocket science for friends of Kriegel to figure out that an attack on Klaassen would be the thing to do. And notice of those ads is public notice that anybody can find out those ads are coming up. It didn't require any inside communication.
Right. So those FEC reports, anybody can look up that information. You're saying Kriegel didn't necessarily have any special insider information or was involved in the illegal
talks.
No, I
get notices of them. Okay. Anybody can get notices. You can. It's right there. It's online. You can sign up. If you want to look on the FEC, you can, or you can sign up for an alert and you get it sent straight to your mailbox. It's not difficult. You know, it's open to the public.
Betty, why do you think Kriegel made that call to Klaassen in the first place? What do you think his intention was?
Now, that is a really good question. And I think even some of his own supporters are shaking their heads saying, yeah, that was not, there's no reason to communicate like that. And it only leads to trouble. Kriegel says he thought it was a nice thing to do. Well,
why not call Senator Beniquisto also? Why only call
Klaassen? I cannot explain. And a lot of people have told him he should not have done that, and he might say the same thing himself now. But for whatever reason, he did call it, and he left it on an answering machine, which is another big no-no for candidates. But all that said, why he made the call, that was sort of unusual in itself. But there's nothing unusual about knowing about the ad, and it doesn't take special knowledge for his friends to think that an attack ad would be the thing to do.
We're talking about the upcoming special election for Fort Myers' 19th congressional district seat with News Press columnist Betty Parker and political science professor Roger Green. That district includes portions of Lee and Collier counties. You can join the conversation with your comments or questions by calling 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And sticking on this topic of the voicemail here, Beniquisto's campaign has also certainly been using that voicemail message to attack both Kriegel and Klaassen, calling them the, quote, new good old boys club, end quote, and suggesting that the familiarity of the language in the message suggests that Klaassen and Kriegel have been working together to attack Beniquisto for some time. There was one piece of literature from Beniquisto's campaign, and I'm going to quote from this here again. It says, "This is obviously the continuation of a much larger conspiratorial conversation between Kurt Klaassen, Paige Kriegel, and Kriegel's super PAC," end quote. Dr. Green, what do you think about that accusation?
Well, I think that's a variation on what Betty was describing as the sort of the interesting accusation through indirection or innuendo that Klaassen and his people had used against Paige Kriegel. I mean, The idea that there's some kind of carefully plotted conspiratorial strategy on the part of Paige Kriegel and Kurt Clausen seems highly improbable if you're thinking it through logically. But in the current,
it sounds like a great novel.
Yeah, it's a great novel. I mean, it would make for great fiction. And I don't think it's an imprudent strategy on Benacquisto's people at this point in this particular hostile, intensely negative environment we have leading up to the primary. But, I think one of the things I would maybe emphasize here with respect to a lot of these things we're discussing is that a lot of things that you would assume people would conclude if they were thinking things through in a highly logical, systematic, rational way aren't necessarily the way things are going to work in this kind of a political environment. Voting is oftentimes, or perhaps most often, a very visceral, emotional process for most voters. And what we as commentators or analysts might think is an obvious point that one would make or a conclusion one would arrive at is not necessarily the way that the average voter is going to think. So I think it's not unexpected that or unusual that people would be maneuvering the way they are in these weeks leading up to the primary.
Hmm. There's also, I think, a point here of women voters who are up for grabs. And women do vote more as a whole than men do, and women tend to support other women. Not always, but in a large general sense. And the more Benacquisto can solidify and rally women around her as the only woman candidate up against this good old boys club, I think was the term they used, mm-hmm. The better that might work for her.
Right. And going back to Clausen's, characterization of himself as the political outsider, then, of course, his opponents have to be the political insiders. Do you really think that's a fair characterization of Paige Kriegel? Because, on the one hand, he did keep his seat in the state house until he was term limited out. But at the same time, when he was in the state legislature, he was somewhat known for clashing with legislative leaders and not always voting the way they wanted him to.
I would say that to a large degree, the sort of this traditional demarcation between insider and outsider that's used so frequently, it's typically pretty misleading. I'm not sure that anyone is quite as outside the system or the network as they typically claim to be, nor are the people who are accused of being insiders quite so thoroughly and rigidly beholden to special interests or party organizations as their opponents typically accuse them of being. But again, in a very intensely negative, emotionally charged period leading up to a primary, a lot of these traditional kind of emotion-based accusations or strategies of insiders versus outsiders, character, conspiracies and the like are what I think you have to expect. They people use these because they tend to push the buttons of voters and prove to be effective oftentimes.
And if I can piggyback onto that, something I'm hearing, a term that I'm hearing from other consultants around the country and people who watch politics are watching this race because it's the only thing going on right now. Mm. But I'm hearing the term low-information voters more than I have ever heard it in the past. And it's not a flattering thing. But it goes to what Roger was talking about people who make a decision on a very emotional, very likability, ad-driven sort of decision. I think is what people are talking about here.
Yeah. One of the few actual issues I've actually seen talked about in the ads was healthcare in a Kurt Clausen ad claiming that Lisbeth Benacquisto, as a senator, had voted in favor of the Medicaid expansion in Florida. And this ad is actually referring to Senator Joe Negron's proposed Healthy Florida plan, which was a much more scaled-down version than the controversial one proposed that would use federal money through the Affordable Care Act. In fact, Benacquisto did not support the Medicaid expansion plan. Is this ad intentionally misleading?
Well, yes. as most negative ads are, it's intentionally, strategically misleading. But again, Betty's right. I mean, this term low information voter is a pretty apt one. You know, the type of argumentation or analysis that you would need to use in order to point out how obviously misleading that claim or accusation is, it's not really going to have an impact on the types of voters we're talking about here who are going to be making their voting decision on, you know, anchored in emotion and impulse rather than in any, you know, what they're listening to in terms of systematic analysis offered by commentators. So,
sure.
I mean, trying to describe, there are several variations, and no, Beniquisto did not support what most people think of as the Medicaid expansion. She supported Negron's plan. But if you try and explain the difference in those two, I mean, it puts me to sleep. It's excruciating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I would even say here, too, and this is something that's said a lot by political scientists, political analysts, journalists and the like who cover politics. You know, many voters, perhaps most voters, will oftentimes claim that they are sick and tired of negative advertising and character assassination in campaigns, and that they wish candidates would focus more on policy issues, real substantive policy issues, and give them some rich substantive information about those issues. But the reality is that when you analyze voting behavior, or even if you just go to meetings or observe voters, they get bored by, you know, these long, rich, substantive discussions about policy issues. And again, it's more emotion and impulse that drives these decisions. So, yeah, Betty's right. I mean, I get bored listening oftentimes to systematic, logical discussions of issues. And I regret that. I feel a little bit embarrassed. But I'm a human just like these voters are, I guess.
You know, a lot of the press releases and communication that we're getting from the campaign that have to deal with endorsements, does that really matter? Does that hold a lot of weight for voters in races like this?
I don't think so. Maybe in some down ballot races where the candidates are not well known and they're with less known candidates, maybe, but in these top of the ballot where everybody knows who's running and there's plenty of information about the people, I question seriously how much difference it makes.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm. And just focusing again on Clausen here, you know, his campaign, in addition to focusing on being the outsider, has also been highlighting his successful business background. There was a recent report from the Naples Daily News that painted a very different picture. Just a couple of the highlights from that report, from Clausen's 9 years as CEO of Hayes Lemmerts. The company laid off more than 1,300 workers, closed 7 plants, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and then in 2010, a federal program designed to protect private pension plans had to take over nearly $94 million in pension costs that the company no longer could afford. And during this period, Clausen was earning a 7-figure salary. How has the Clausen campaign, how have they been responding to that? And do you think that's going to be effective? And do you think that this story from the Naples Daily News is going to really have that much of an impact?
I'm not sure how much of an impact the Naples story will have. I think that the voters who have gravitated toward Clausen in the early stages, I'm not sure that any of those allegations or revelations are necessarily going to alter their support for Clausen. I mean, I think it was an interesting story, and it does illustrate the degree to which big business in America is still kind of embedded in a whole network of government benefits and regulatory accommodations and the like that make the claims of being a business outsider far removed from government a little bit disingenuous. But I don't know that it'll necessarily erode his support among the ardent Tea Party kind of flavored voters.
I talked to some of the voters who were with him early on, right after that story came out. And they tend to, as Roger said, they're very dismissive of the story. They just don't like, they didn't like, they would argue with the story. They're
sure.
Not, they don't accept that.
Sure. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. But thanks to my guests, Betty Parker, political columnist for the News Press, and Dr. Roger Green, political science professor here at FGCU. Thank you both.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
There's more information on today's show, as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers, Luke Martin and Richard Cinqui. This is WGCU Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.